Thanks for having me, Laura.
So, Claire, I'm not sure if cane toads are really ugly or just because they're causing so much damage to native animals that I think they're really ugly, but my God, they are horrible looking things. And how worried really should we be about cane toads?
Well, that's a good question. Cane toads are still moving across Western Australia. Their current distribution is throughout most of the Kimberley now, and they're still moving at a rate of 50 kilometres a year. And so far, no one has been successful in slowing or stopping the movement of cane toads. So they have had an impact, as you mentioned, on native species across the tropical north of Australia. And they continue to have an impact on certain species in the wake of the invasion front through the Kimberley. But we've still got much to learn about what their impact will be as they start to move through other kinds of landscapes that we haven't learnt much yet about, including the arid parts of Western Australia. And there's still much to learn about whether their rate of movement might change, whether their impacts might change, and whether some of our current management techniques might be more effective in arid areas. And whether there might be, science is always constantly evolving, and who knows what new control techniques might be around the corner.
So when you say moving into arid areas, it's because in the tropics it's more like their natural habitat and they love that. But when they get into drier climates, they might not love it so much and that spread might slow.
Yeah, exactly. So if you have a look at the Kimberley, for example, around Kununurra, cane toads are really thick on the ground when it's raining. We run our community toad musters in Kununurra for that reason, because we can get a lot of toad meat in a short space of time. But if you go hunting for toads in other areas that are infested by toads in West Australia, so Fitzroy Crossing, for example, we know they're there, but they can be quite hard to find unless there's been a recent rainfall. And even then, they're quite thin on the ground compared to the really tropical areas of our state. So as they start to move into cooler, more arid areas, at the desert fringes and down towards the Pilbara, their behaviour and their impact may change quite a lot.
And can you tell us a bit about that impact? Obviously, cane toads are poisonous. So if a native animal, I guess a mammal, and we talk about reptiles as well, were to lick or eat or chew a cane toad, that poison is enough to kill them. And not just to kill the animal, but can you tell us a bit about the apex predators and the impact that that has on, I guess, on the ecosystem?
Sure. Well, cane toads have a three-pronged impact on ecosystems. So there's the impact of competition. So the things they're eating, they're taking, cane toads will eat pretty much anything that fits in their mouth, and they eat a lot of food. So that food, all the bugs and lizards and everything else they're eating is taking away food for other frogs and things in the environment. So that's one of their impacts. Predation is another impact, so the actual impact they're having on the bugs that they're eating and the populations of those bugs themselves. But the main impact, as you've mentioned, is called toxic ingestion.
Right.
And that impacts the apex predators who would otherwise be interested in eating frogs that see a cane toad and think that it looks like a tasty snack. And the boofer toxin in the cane toad kills a lot of these apex predators, not all of them. There's some predators like the saltwater crocodile and dingo that are not impacted at all.
Right.
And a number of the predatory birds are also not impacted. We know they can handle the toxin.
Yeah.
But there is a number of species that do get impacted. So a number of the elapid snakes, the venomous snakes, the frog-eating snakes, basically, northern quolls, large goannas, blue-tongue lizards, they're among the species, and freshwater crocodile, they're among the species we know that will try cane toads and are impacted by them. And then when you take out the apex predator in an ecosystem, you get a bit of a flow-on effect of some animals are then released from being predated on by those apex predators, and those numbers may increase, and other animals will decrease because they of them being preyed on by those middle level predators, and there's a flow on effect right down through the ecosystem.
Oh, I see what you mean. So in the hierarchy of the animals, if you knock out some that I guess more at the top,
yeah,
the ones less down will increase, but then the ones below them
will decrease. So they sometimes call it the trophic cascade. So, but yeah, it's a flow-on effect that continues throughout the whole ecosystem and will relate to everything else in the ecosystem, including plants.
And you mentioned in there a couple of things that you'd been doing, toad busting, which just sounds like so much fun, going around the tropics collecting cane toads in a bag. And you mentioned cane toad meat from the toad busting, as well as taste aversion. Can you talk us through what you meant by those?
Yeah, so as cane toads moved into Western Australia, the first response was community toad busts to try and see if they could be stopped, whether it was possible to stop them coming into Western Australia. Fairly quickly, it became evident that was going to be a very difficult task and ultimately failed. So the next step was to look at, well, what can we do and what are the impacts? And the biggest impacts, as we've identified, were on those apex predators. So the next step was, well, what can we do to protect these apex predators? Perhaps we can teach them not to eat cane toads.
Right.
So that led to a whole lot of research about conditioned taste aversion. So the process of conditioned taste aversion is where you give an animal a bad experience to essentially teach them not to eat that particular food. So in this case, we're trying to find ways of teaching these apex predators in the landscape to avoid eating cane toads.
Yeah.
So there was a lot to be learnt in this space, including how different types of animals learn. What kind of experience they need to be given and how to make that relate to a cane toad so that they actually think, oh yep, I've had a bellyache. I know it was something to do with this animal, I'm going to avoid it, in a similar way to you might have a bad meal at a takeaway restaurant and then you relate that to the restaurant rather than how much you drink, for example. So for northern quolls, it was found that they could learn to avoid cane toads by eating a sausage that contained, that tasted like a cane toad and smelt like a cane toad, but actually contained a nausea-inducing chemical, thiobendazole.
Right.
And that would give them enough of a bad experience that they would then avoid a cane toad. For
remember the smell.
Yes, right. The smell and the taste. But for some of the reptiles, they needed something that looked a little bit more like a toad. So for goannas, the conditioned taste aversion treatment is through a baby toad or a metamorph, which has a very small amount of bufotoxin. So it's known not to be toxic. But just enough to teach them not to go near the toads again.
That's very interesting. Yeah. So is it true to say that saltwater crocodiles aren't impacted by the bufotoxin?
They aren't, yeah, okay, which is probably because their range overlaps with Asia, where there's another toad which has a similar toxin.
So, Claire, you mentioned there that saltwater crocodiles aren't impacted by the bufotoxin, but what about freshwater crocodiles?
Well, freshwater crocodiles are one of the species that's known to be impacted by the bufotoxin, and they live in environments generally where they come across the toad quite a lot. And there has been some concern about how freshwater crocodile populations, particularly in some gorges that are the last areas to dry in the dry season, so end up with a really high concentration of freshwater crocodiles, how those particular gorges will fare when the cane toad arrives. And the department has actually been surveying these populations for a really long time to get an idea of the population size and movement and genetics of the population.
Mm-hmm.
In preparation for the cane toads arriving. And we've actually been involved with some really exciting collaborative research with Macquarie University to try and find out whether we can train freshwater crocodiles, and particularly in relation to these populations, to avoid eating cane toads to minimise the impact.
That's so interesting. And I guess the traditional owners of the area, they would know all about that.
Absolutely. They obviously, it's a... the freshwater crocodile species are really culturally important to many of the traditional owner groups, and this research has been in collaboration with Bunuba Ranger Group, who've been really involved from the beginning, both with the ongoing monitoring of the crocodile populations and the trials, the taste aversion trials as well, which has been fantastic.
Yeah, so they'd be very motivated to protect those species.
Absolutely, yes. And their knowledge of where the important crocodile populations are across the landscape has been invaluable. So the community toad musters we run these days are to collect meat for to make either baits that look like a toad or sausage baits. Yeah, depending on the species that we're working with.
Amazing. So it's like I don't know if the French would get a penchant for the cane toad frog's legs, like, that'll help the cause. And we've been reading in your article that's in the upcoming edition of Landscope that eDNA sampling is helping the cause. Can you talk us through that?
So eDNA is a relatively new technology, which has been a fantastic tool to be able to detect any animals in low numbers in the environment, particularly cryptic species, when they're very hard to find visually. We can take these tests and find out if they've shed just a little bit of themselves to leave in the environment. If there's water in an area, if there's cane toads in an area anywhere near that water body, they'll be detectable from when they've stepped into the water to rehydrate themselves.
Great.
So they're detectable for up to 7 days, which means that in areas where the traditional detection methods, which is spotlighting at night or visual searches during the day, are unable to detect cane toads, we can use eDNA to detect them. So this is really useful for our frontline mapping.
Mm-hmm.
We can actually detect cane toads up to 10 kilometres ahead of where we can visually find them. And it will be a really good tool for use on offshore islands to detect cane toads that are in really low numbers or have only just arrived on the island, with a really simple test that doesn't mean that people need to stay on these islands overnight and go spotlighting for hours with a torch to find a toad, which gives us a lot more scope to be able to manage and contain new infestations on islands.
So you've talked about making sure or helping those apex predators to understand not to eat cane toads, and you've talked about mapping where the cane toads have gone to and where they might go to next. And you also mentioned when we first started talking about not knowing how they're going to cope in arid areas. Is it like, what's the focus for the cane toad team coming up now? And is there any plans to actually slow down population numbers of the animals themselves?
There aren't any, no one's really been successful so far to slow down or stop the cane toads moving.
In Australia
so far. So we're really dedicated to finding out as much as we can about how they'll move through arid areas to find out if they will slow down naturally.
Right.
And also if there's any new tools on the horizon that may help us to manage cane toads, either their impact or their speed. So we're focusing on learning more about how they'll behave through the new environments. And supporting some new research in this space. And we're also looking at mapping sensitive species ahead of the front line so we can do some management planning about how to protect these species if or when the cane toad arrives in their area.
And how bad is it over east in the cane toad situation in the eastern states?
Well, it's interesting on the southern invasion front in New South Wales,
mm-hmm.
cane toads have slowed right down.
Right.
So that they're encountering new habitats and new areas, and they're really not moving very fast at all. And any areas like satellite populations have been effectively mopped up by NGOs and authorities over that way. So So there's a lot of there's a lot to be learnt by their experiences and some new, they've definitely developed some new techniques for controlling toads in environments that aren't their core habitat, that aren't really 100% suitable for cane toads to thrive. Once they're just surviving and not thriving, then they're a lot easier to manage.
Absolutely. And you mentioned about NGOs, and we also talked about traditional owners and the community. It sounds like there's a lot of, you know, people involved coming at it from all different angles. Can you talk to us a bit more about the community involvement and, I guess, all the different stakeholders that are helping?
Yeah, well, we work with people throughout the Kimberley at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
When we do our community toad musters, we involve all sorts of stakeholders, traditional owner groups, ranger groups.
Kids
must
love it.
Yep, absolutely. We have busloads of kids coming out and they're so fantastic cool. at collecting toads. We're also working, when we map the cane toad front line, there's a number of stakeholders who are really keen to help, and we collaborate with when we do that. So in the last couple of years, Dambi Mungari and Nikita Mangala ranger groups have been really active collaborating with us. And cane toads are moving towards Yarrow country, so we're engaging a lot more with Yarrow. There's a number of NGOs as well, AWC and WWF, Environs Kimberley are all involved with mapping the cane toad as well.
That's so fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me today, Claire. I've learned a lot. I already know that cane toads are not even a face a mother could love, but it's great that there's so much awareness out there about there, and there's so many different types of people that are interested, and you guys are looking at it from historic perspective, what's happened and what's happened over east, currently what's going on, and you're always looking forward to, you know, where they're going to go to next and what you can do about that. So let's just hope that the inner part of Western Australia is arid and horrible for cane toads and they hate it and they stop moving. If you'd like to know more about the eDNA sampling that the cane toad team has been up to, you can read Claire's article, Toad Tracking Technology, on page 24 in the latest edition of Landscape Magazine, out now in stores and online. This audio story was brought to you by Landscape Magazine, published by Western Australia's Department of Biodiversity, Conservation and Attractions. For more information and to subscribe to the print edition of the magazine, visit shop.dbca.wa.gov.